the meeting. The only reason why we're doing this is so then parents that cannot attend tonight could listen to it later. So the title of our talk is How to Support Responsible Teens, and Maura Cassidy is our speaker tonight. Thank you so much for being here, Maura. Take it away.
Okay, well, contrary to what Maria said, I have quite a few good resources that I've actually received from great teachers who went before me. So to use the old phrase, we stand on the shoulders of giants. So there have been great, great educators in Rosemont and who I benefit from personally. So I'm just passing on a lot of things that I've heard in the school over the years and to you, because I found them personally really beneficial. But thank you, Maria, for getting us all together for this. As Maria mentioned, the talk is on responsibility. And I think sometimes when you use that term responsibility with teenagers, you have to use it with caution, because it can sound to some quite a boring term. So I think there's some difficulties hearing me, so I'm going to turn that up a little bit. Is that a bit better there for you, David? So I suppose in terms of the actual term responsibility, I thought there's an interesting way to break it down. And the first thing I suppose to say is it's your ability to respond. And I think as educators, you as parents, as a primary educators, and us in the school, it's a very nice way of considering responsibility, that you're trying to help our teens essentially to be able to respond to life in a very confident, happy, you know, you might say, engaged way. And so you're helping them to choose a response. Sounds still not great. Wonder what that's about. Is that any better? We're having difficulties with sound here, so. Is that any better for people? You okay there? Okay, I'll just keep going. I've turned it up a bit more, so
yeah,
it's not too loud for some people. Anyway, so I suppose the idea we'd be trying to communicate to the teens, our teens, is their ability to choose well, their ability to respond emotionally in a sort of balanced way, not letting their emotions hijack them, that they get flooded by anger or fear or just upset. And that they could engage, they're trying to help them to engage their willpower, you know, to engage that sense of choosing. And also there are that overall really that sense of self-mastery. And what it looks like is really their ability to be responsible for others, because as we know, maturity is not just responsibility for oneself, but responsibility for others, you know, for their friends, and then later when they go to form their own families, in their community. And also that conscientious awareness of people who need the care of others, you know, the more vulnerable in our communities. And that's really why you might say responsibility is such an important leadership quality or virtue. And again, I suppose it's helpful to know what we know from our own experience, what an absence of responsibility looks like. We tend to blame, you know, it's never our fault. When we're being irresponsible, we tend not to like to follow the rules because they don't apply to me. We've seen that in COVID, as some people, apparently 8% of the population will consistently think none of the public health guidelines apply to them at all. Finding ways to justify behavior, you know, we've often seen that ourselves or in our teams, you know, where they say, well, the reason I did that was because of this, because I didn't have a choice, or because you made me to, or because you said this, or because whatever. And then again, just a lack of awareness of one's personal behavior on others, you know, failure to realize the impact that one might have. So in the family, it could be when a teen doesn't realize the impact of their irresponsible behavior on their siblings, you know, they don't show up, they're late, they don't seem to care, they lose things, they, you know, in a consistent kind of sort of careless way, that affects timekeeping of the family, it affects plans, it affects so many things. As caring adults, we'd all love to our teenagers to be responsible, you know, to do their chores on time, maybe to lend a hand without being asked, to text to say where they are, to have a bunch of peers who are responsible as well. So I think that's something we're familiar with ourselves. But I think ultimately what we have to try to consider is how we can teach our teens. I'm going to actually put on my, if you give me a moment, I'm going to put on my headset because I think some people are still having a difficulty. So I'm going to try this. Apologies for this. I haven't had this problem before, so I'm not sure why I have this evening. But anyway, here we go. So ultimately what we're trying to do is to teach our teens how to be, to learn, you might say. It's a learned behavior. It's not something we can expect our teens to have. And specifically, some of you will know, I know some of you are not first year parents, so you'll know from previous building leadership talks, we talked about the development of the teenage brain at length. And as we know, the frontal cortex, this part of the brain, which is really the part of the brain where that's responsible for executive, the executive decision-making process, the ability to reason, the ability to foresee consequences, the ability to take prudent decisions, to balance, you know, the good, the bad, the indifferent. That takes up until the age of 21 to be fully formed. So the truth is, it's not formed in our 12 or 13, 16, 18 year olds. And we can't expect it to be. So I think it's really helpful for us to take that on board. At the same time, in the role of parent or educators, it's very helpful to consider ourselves as coaches. In this, if we don't get into the space, you know, if you're imagining a hockey match or a basketball match or a soccer match, you know, you're on the sidelines, you're encouraging, you're watching their game, you're giving the feedback afterwards. Okay, we're going to have to come in here again. I actually done all this early, but thank you. And we are just going to take a moment here because it seems there is a problem. Hello, can we hear this? Okay, that should be a bit better. I hope that works. Yeah, I think that was Dave who responded there. Yeah, I have the headset selected, Dave, so hopefully that works for you. Anyway, so just, I suppose the point there is that as parents and as educators, what we're effectively doing is we are coaching them into the space of taking on little by little more and more responsibility. And it is helpful with their other half at home or if there's another adult at home with us to be able to sort of talk about what our expectation for our teen is. You know, as a first year, many of you will notice that your teens are maybe tired, a bit frazzled, trying to manage the various different subjects, the books, the new teachers, the different experiences. They're exhausted, they're dying for midterms, and they can catch up. So it is quite a different space. You know, we're trying to help them just little by little, not to forget the lunchbox every day, to remember their home economics ingredients, to remember that teacher's name, but none of it's a failure. You know, we can see when our teens are trying, and it's that we help them not to overarch or at the same time not to over-dramatize things, which are a normal part of just teenage existence. And again, I suppose ourselves letting go, and that can be challenging for parents, you know, because very quickly, you know, they grow up very, very quickly. And allowing our daughter, your daughter rather, and our teens to be responsible means also allowing the consequences of their irresponsibility. And you know, and that's where the learning takes place. So avoiding the helicopter approach, you know, sort of always getting ready to pick up the balls, because when we do that, what we're really telling our teens is we don't think they're able. And that's extremely important we don't do that, because it's like they don't learn, you know, it's a little like a muscle that they never learn to use. And the more unused to using it they are, the harder it is as they get older to use it. So again, I suppose there I often use, and I know other teachers might with some of the older teens, I'd often say to them in coaching, you know, you're growing into a young adult, and you can see their eyes kind of enlarging when you say that. And the reason I think we do it is because you want them to know is that you're treating them differently. And they see that. They see the respect that you have for what they say, their opinion, what they think. And when you have that sense of expectation, in a healthy sense of expectation, you know, they step up to the plate. you know, and it is really nice to see that maturity in them. So again, it's also that scary space as parents, I can imagine, between the guidance and at the same time allowing them to give them their freedoms. And it does require quite a bit of patience and an awful lot of diplomacy. And at times you may feel that you're seeing no results, and that you feel like giving up. And I would really encourage you, take heart, because it is possible to raise responsible teens in the 21st century with the Gen Z and the Zoomer generation. It is possible. It may seem at times that it's completely impossible, but it isn't. And you're doing a good job, I'm sure, much better than you think. So again, I suppose one of the first things about teenage responsibility is the whole difference between responding and reacting. And you may think you have an incredible reactor at home, almost to the level of a nuclear reactor, in the sense that when we think of responsibility, what it is that lovely gap between stimulus and response. So the stimulus is, you know, the homework, and the response is, when am I going to do it? The stimulus is a younger sibling has yet again taken something from her older sibling's wardrobe. And that's the stimulus, a bad stimulus, you might say. And what's the response? And what we're trying to do with our team is to give them, you might say, the permission to have the space, you might say the 10 seconds, the 5 seconds to go, how am I going to respond to this? How would my better self respond? But oftentimes they don't respond. They just, it's like, you know, it's like a microwave, literally. Bing, react, react, react. Because they've been hijacked by their emotions. Okay, hormones have something to do with it, but it's because they have the undeveloped frontal cortex. But we're trying to help them. And oftentimes in this situation, we're trying to help them to understand the role of, as I said, of their will and of their reason. And willpower is helping them to see, look, you're in charge and you're the one making the choice. And oftentimes they're fearful of making choices. Oftentimes they make bad decisions. Oftentimes they don't make choices because they're afraid of doing something that's unpopular or their peer group aren't doing. And so by not making a choice, they're effectively making a choice. It's just too late than that. So again, I just move on to the point about a compass. We're trying to help our teens to have a moral compass. And what does a moral compass look like? Well, it's the good decisions, you know, and this is really a bit of Aristotle, the Greek philosopher. What's a good decision? I say good because it's not the same as perfect. There's no perfect decisions in this world. Nobody, not everybody's going to be happy, and you might make some of the people happy some of the time. But the important thing is that your team knows she's made a good decision, the best decision from where she's sitting. And I suppose it's good to think about what the characteristics of a bad decision are. So Aristotle would have defined, you might say, the absence of good with a decision based on popularity, a decision based on power, or a decision based on perfection. And so the popularity is the typical thing. Well, Dad, everyone else is doing it. When was that ever a good decision? You know? Power can be a sense of, well, sort of the competitive thing there, you know? I want to be better than everybody else. And while it is lovely, they come home and say, I got the best marks in the class. Yeah, that's lovely. But that can't be the primary reason. And it's good every so often as a parent to go, I don't mind where you come in the class. What I care about is that you did your best, and you did your best today. And that's good that they hear that. That when they get a good grade or a bad grade, and of course, that's typically where our teens tend to rate themselves. And then, of course, the other one is perfection. And that's one I think we need to, I suppose, be very aware of with teenage girls. I'm sure some of you read some of the information reporting during the week on Instagram and how it's toxic for teenage girls. And there's been a lot of studies done on it. But this whole idea of effortless perfection, having to be beautiful, having to be academically the best, having to be the best in the sports field and the funniest and the best entertainer. And this is all just not true. But that whole idea of perfection, we're not looking for perfect here, and that's definitely not the same as good. In fact, it's actually an illness, really, an emotional, you might say, fanaticism. Perfectionism has been defined as arbitrarily high goals, which nobody's setting but our society, and they're not necessarily based in anything good or worthwhile. So it's very good that we help our teams to stamp that out, because that's not what we're interested in. How do we help our teams to make good decisions? Well, you might say, well, there's three aspects of willpower here. So if you just bear with me. The first aspect, I'd say, is the I won't part. And the I won't part is the typical part we would say in terms of the temptation, the bad devil, okay? In the sense of what's stopping them from making a good decision, you know, or for being responsible, okay? So, you know, it could be the binging on their phone. You know, they're just going from one series to another series because they have Netflix on their phone, or because they're on Instagram, scrolling endlessly. Now there's so many more ads on Instagram. They're getting into the ads, which of course are all generated to suit the teenage need for X, Y, or Z. So it's a thing of I won't. So in order to be responsible about the use of time and homework, you know, and get their study in, I won't means I'll turn the phone off, I'll leave it downstairs, or I'll give it to you, Dad or Mom. That's the I won't bit of the will. The other bit is, I suppose, the I will bit. So what will you do? If the phone is downstairs, what are you going to do then? Well, I'm going to do my maths homework first. You know, so it's putting it into a proactive space, you know, which is really important, because otherwise it's just theory. And that's you might say, the lived responsibility. And then the third element is what we call I want. And this is the motivation piece. You know, well, what do I want? I want to be much better at maths. I want to enjoy that class, because I want to know what's coming up next, to be comfortable with what's done before. I want to be an engineer someday, or I want to, whatever. I want, that's the motivation, the bigger one. I care, I want to try harder. And just to introduce a little bit on ethos here, you know, which I think is helpful. The Catholic moral compass, you might say. The Catholic moral compass is about compassion, and it's about mercy. So here it's, we learn good by practice. So the failing, the starting again, the picking oneself up is all part of that space of growth. It's the moral compass of second chances. You can always try again. And we don't always succeed. And again, the other aspect of the Catholic moral compass is we do it together. And I think teens forget that. They forget. I often say to them, girls, you're on a winning team here. Look how many teachers you have working for your best. Look at your coach. Look at your head. Look at your parents. Look at your grandparents. Look at how many people. And we're all doing this together. You know, in school, in your class, you're not competing against each other. You're all helping each other. And I think that's really helpful and really important that we state that, because that's pretty counterculture. Knowing your team, I think is, you know, I suppose our responsibility as educators is knowing what responsibility looks like for each team. It's different. So if you have a conscientious teen at home, you know, the teen who thinks that every comment or every call to responsibility by a teacher, you know, from punctuality to writing their homework down, to getting the assignment in on time, is directed personally at them. And you know they're at their homework every night, and they're always, you know, always punctual, always on time, and they get their work done. That's something we need to help them. So responsibility for that team is their ability to zoom out the lens, their ability to go, I don't think that was meant for you, dear. You know, typically I would have maybe a Leaving Cert or two in that category, you know, and I'd say to them, look, the Leaving Cert is a marathon. It's not a sprint. You can't do any more. And sometimes they're a little bit like a balloon that's overinflated and they're just ready to burst. And we've had to help them to grow in self-awareness. You know, that idea that not every comment, not everything that's said needs to be responded in like manner. And not everything that's said applies directly to them. There are 30 other odd students in that classroom. And so that space of reflection, you remember we talked about the space between stimulus and response. They need to be able to have the confidence and the courage to be able to go, this doesn't apply to me, because I know I'm doing my best. I can't do any better. And that's having the confidence and the courage to go, that's okay. And they need to be able to pick up on their own stress signals. You know, do they get a bit cranky? Do they get a little bit upset? Do they get a little bit moody, you know, when they're overly conscientious? And how to sort of be aware of that and to step back when they notice those signals. For the teen who's, you might say, at the other end of things, in other words, the teen who lacks motivation, in other words, nothing ever applies to her in the responsibility area. In other words, you know, nothing to do with me. Homework on time, nothing to do with me. Punctuality, why would that have anything to do with me? And she appears not to care, okay? And this teen gets an awful lot of flack from caring adults, usually. And this is where sometimes she could be a perfectionist, in fact. So she's afraid to try because she automatically knows she will not, you might say, she won't ever be able to, you might say, live up to her own expectations, not to mine everybody else's. So she doesn't even want to try. The other thing as well is when we're looking at willpower, it's not a question of saying, put away your phone, stop doing that, don't do the other, you know. And it's not even a question of saying, well, what won't you sit down and get your homework done? It's the willpower of, what do you want? Ultimately, what do you want? And you find this a lot in the older teens. You know, the rebel team. It's just having that. It's not what do you want in terms of exasperation. What do you really want? It's what do you want? Like no limits. What would you really like? Where would you like to be in 5 years? And they're almost surprised at the question. How could anybody ask me that question? Because I've set myself up for so much irresponsible behavior that I'm not entitled to that question, and I'm so afraid of it. But you. Little by little, you realize these teens is they're idealistic usually. And once they've sort of talked about what they want, then you can start talking about, well, what do you want to do about it? And then you'll talk about what's stopping you doing that. And it's a reverse psychology really that's needed there. And the third, I suppose, and it is, there's many, many more teens in between. So this is a bit of a stereotype. So you'll have to forgive me for this. But the third type is the teen of... sometimes the teen who lacks confidence, maybe the teen who's can be very disappointed with life. Again, quite idealistic. It's very strong core values. Really has, and I suppose often struggles with their own self-esteem, which most teens do. Let's be honest, because that's the teen space. I suppose there is what they need is many times to. Learn that life is to be lived. They can't stand on the you might say, on the cheering on line. They can't be cheering on life. They have to live it. And there's no such things as real failures are part of it. There's not there really isn't. Failures are normal, and not to be afraid of failure, to get out of their head and into reality. And that's really important there, you know, help them to challenge their negative self-talk. And again here, a good sense of humor on the part of adults is important, you know. So who told you that? Oh, really? You told yourself that, really? And you think you're the best judge of it all. Oh, really? You know, a good sense of humor there. And they get annoyed with that and upset with it. But, you know, they're a little bit too demanding and a little bit too conscientious, a little bit there. We need to show our teens what's in it for them always. And because they are Gen Zs and they are Zoomers. And I'm just going to share with you a slide, which, forgive me now if it's a waste of time, but I just think this slide is helpful. I find it useful because it just helps them to see, well, what's in it for them. So those of you who don't have your camera, well, you might be able to see this. I hope you can all see this. But anyway, what does responsibility look like? And I suppose there it's ultimately a case of... well, you can be trusted. You know, all teens love to be trusted. You can own up for your own mistakes. You know, and that's one they find hard. But every teen is, well, a lot of teens are very into sincerity and authenticity and owning it. And the more black and white it is, and they can be quite demanding in that sense and judgmental for themselves. But Owning up to your own mistakes, authentic, that's what responsibility looks like. Not fake. In other words, you're responsible about your friendships. They're the same with that group of friends or with that group of friends. You know, gossip isn't tolerated much. Making good choices. All teens want to make good choices ultimately. But we have to help them realize that it's learning how to make good choices. It's not automatic. And just because they don't like making them doesn't mean they're not human. In fact, join the human race. None of us like making decisions. What does responsible behavior look like? Committed. They do what they say they're going to do. You know, so we as adults need to have to call them out on behavior that's not that. You said you'd do it and you didn't. Do you want to talk me through that? What happened? Reliable. You know, they were there for their siblings. They got that job done at home. You asked them to do something and you're still not having to ask them a week later. Ready to clear up misunderstandings. That's really important with their peer group. And again, going back to that idea of educators that we're on the sidelines of the pitch, of the game. We're not playing the game for them. And sometimes as caring adults, we want to clear up the misunderstandings for them. So the more they can clear up misunderstandings among their peer group, for example, you know, and just even to think about this for a moment, if you have a very gentle teen, sensitive, you might say, teen, which is a beautiful characteristic, that teen will find it very hard dealing with the sort of what I would call the more choleric, get stuff done leader teen. And they might find that behavior aggressive. But what we need to help our teen to do in that situation is, well, did you tell her that? Did you tell her what you thought? And not to shy away from stepping into the space of conversation and discussion and negotiation. If you're at the other side of that discussion and your teen is more of the, you might say the leader in terms of the choleric leader, getting stuff done, who finds the gentle character annoying, and I wish they'd say what they want, and can they just get on with it? Maybe it's trying to help them to understand, well, not everybody sees it the way you do, and maybe you need to tone it down a little and be a little bit more gentle or whatever it is. And if they have a sibling at home who's a little bit more gentle, you can say, well, it's like dealing with so-and-so at home. Maybe try that more. So that's a very important aspect of helping them to be, our teens to be responsible in relationships or for their emotional responses. And then willing to do your part, you know. All of our teens can do their part. You know, they can all contribute. I have to say, it's really nice to see teens who may have auditioned for the musical and didn't get the part they want, but they're thinking, you know, I'm going to do backstage, you know, because they want to be, to do their part in the musical. And I think that's fantastic, because it's all about it's so much about participation in life and celebrating things in life. And I think doing your bit is what makes it happen. It's what creates the magic moments, really. So that's just really, I suppose, in essence, what that piece is really about. Again, going back to a few other pieces on this, as parents, I was just trying to think about 8 ways to instill accountability or responsibility in our teens. And the first one is demonstrating personal responsibility ourselves. Now, that can be a bit tough because we think, well, you know, does that mean I need to be perfect? Not remotely. You're obviously doing a lot of it already. And no harm to remind yourself what you're doing. You know, you show up at work on time, you pay your bills, you manage to get your teen to school every day, you put the dinner out on the table, etc., etc., etc. So there's an awful lot of responsibility going on in a caring adult's life. I think as well, the studies show, and it's no harm to remind yourselves of this, that parents are the most important adults in a teen's life. Okay, not their parents. And that role modeling is the most effective tool you have in terms of helping your teen to actually be responsible, because they see it being done. Now, I think as well here is that it's not perfect, and that's very helpful. It's very, very helpful for our teens to see that as adults, we drop the ball. Not consistently, maybe, but every so often. Because trying, failing, reflecting on how to improve, and going at it again is the space of learning, and that's the space of being human. And we're giving our teens permission to be human, you know, by doing it as adults. So maybe saying to your second half, listen, I'm really sorry, love, I forgot, I didn't do that. In other words, I lacked reliability there. Or owning up for something, you know, or not playing our part, or whatever it is, you know. Were we encouraging them to do the same? Not blaming others, you know, when we're tempted to, you know, blame. Or when we're tempted to blame circumstances. Or we're tempted to justify behavior. And if we do, we go, and our team calls us out, we go, you're dead right. You know, and that's not easy. That's not easy to do as adults, but it's great if we can admit mistakes, apologize for them, make amends and move on, because our teams will do the same. And it's I always say the greatest courage is the courage to own up, the courage to show up, the courage to admit and to say sorry. And I think that's really, it's great if we can really teach our teams that. Creating a culture of responsibility at home. And I say, sometimes use the word accountability, although I find that word a little bit weak in comparison. But anyway, every family has its own culture of responsibility. So what is yours? You know, what are your values, your expectations, your rules, your hopes? And agreeing them at the outset, you know, and each member of the family needing to be responsible for that, following the rules, the expectations. No one in the family really gets to change the rules. Usually, as caring adults, you will be reminded consistently how, as the oldest, I had to do everything. And as the youngest, she does nothing. She's a complete flake. In fact, she will hardly grow into a teenager if the rate you're going. So don't worry, you'll be reminded of that consistently. I think here it's, I suppose, we can't change the rules usually, unless we decided with our other half that we are going to change the rules and a very good reason to do it. There are milestones of responsibility, and I think it's really good to talk about it, you know, as caring adults. What are those milestones? You know, what is my 13-year-old? What are her milestones? You know, okay, it's maybe not forgetting lunch, home economics ingredients, sports gear, consistently pretending it has nothing to do with her, that it's going to fall from the sky. You know, that's something we need to someday. She's not going to have her sports gear because you're not going to go up to school with it. She's not going to have her lunch box, and she's going to have to ask somebody else to give her somewhere to get permission to go to the shop or to ask somebody to get her something or whatever it is. If she's not facing up to the consequences of irresponsible behavior, she's never going to learn. And that does require, you might say, supporting each other as adults, keeping strong, even though as adults when we're tired, we feel like giving in. Resist the urge to make excuses for teams' mistakes. Sometimes the natural consequences are the best reminder. Mistakes are a great opportunity to grow, and it's really good if we can, and important as adults, that we can, you might say, take those opportunities when you feel like losing it with your team, going, look, we'll talk about it later, okay? And really remembering to talk about it, because if they're not reflecting on behavior, they're not learning. You know, we can all make mistakes, but if the reflection space is wrong, or doesn't happen, no learning. It's a little bit like a dog. You look at dogs when they go near a thistle, and thistle, you know, prickles them. And then they go back again and again to the thistle, like as if the thistle is going to not prickle them all over. And for me, I always thought that was relearning for me to realize animals are different than human beings. Usually once bitten, twice shy. And I think that's what we need our teams to see, is that once bitten, twice shy, we're not going to do it again or again and again. And helping them to reflect personally on that, you know, something that they handled badly. And we will notice a tug of war there between their whims, you know, giving in to, oh, I just couldn't be bothered. So I couldn't be bothered studying for the test. And then the next morning is tears at the breakfast table. I have a test today and I'm going to fail. And as a parent, you feel like dropping in the note, you know, she didn't have a good night last night. No. You need to let her go in. You need to let her fail the test. You need to go, look, it's not the end of the world. The sun still rises. The sun still goes down. Mum and dad still love you. You just got the raw end of the teacher today, but maybe that won't happen again. And so that's really, really important, because that's part also of resilience. And that's the result of responsibility, is resilience. You can't have one without the other. So a lot of things there, the whims, facing the consequences of decisions. again, helping them to visualize what responsibility looks like, you know, and helping them to see, you remember in first year, you know, for those of you who are maybe not first year parents, do you remember, you know, you weren't able to do that. Do you remember? Look what you're well able to do now. Or remember that teacher you were petrified about and you wouldn't ask a question in class. You know, look how at ease you are now. The things change when they have that ability to step into that space. Again, and helping them, I suppose, focusing on helping them to be responsible for their moods and reactions. You know, and sometimes, unfortunately, in our world, everything's about stress. You're stressed, and we're so petrified of the stress space. I don't know, there's a wonderful book by Kelly McGonigal called The Upside of Stress, and it's wonderful. And the whole, you might say, basic understanding of all the studies she's done is effectively that stress is a bit, is like the adrenaline and the cortisol. The good adrenaline is what you see in elite performance, you know, just before they're off the blocks and winning the, you know, the gold medal in that track event. They have the adrenaline. So where what they do with that moment of adrenaline, if they don't do anything and they run away from it and they're fearful, our teens, well, it becomes associated with stress and it becomes a cortisol moment, which is negative. Whereas if we get used to saying, no, deal with it, take on the adrenaline. And in that case, try the test. Don't be afraid of failure. It's not the end of the world. And let's look at it tomorrow. Let's look at it when the results come in. They get used to the fact that there can be bad consequences. And sometimes bad consequences in life are unintended and unpreventable. I have nothing to do with them. But as adults, they'll have to deal with them. But if they're not used to dealing with them as a teen, they're going to have a very difficult time dealing with them as an adult. So again, that's a very helpful one for us to think about there. And that they wouldn't be at the mercy of others' emotional, you might say, irresponsibility. And that's, again, the stimulus and response space, helping them reflect on that. They come home all stressed and anxious because somebody said something to somebody in school today and they were caught in the crossfire. Well, help them. Say, well, why would you get upset about that? Was that your fault? Was that your responsibility? You know, that's not your responsibility and it's not your fault. You need to be able to walk away. You need to be able to realize that this has nothing to do with me. You can still be her friend. You can still be her friend, etc. So really important there that they, you might say, they're strong at the inner core and that we're helping them to be strong at the inner core as adults and as caring adults because we really care. And that's often the tough side of tough love, really, isn't it? Because none of us like doing it. But we have to believe in the outcome. Keep imagining that team is capable of responding well. Again, responsibility online. And anyway, I'll come to this a little bit more. But, you know, when do they mishandle that? And as parents and caring adults, I think it's really important for us to think about this one quite a bit because it is a space that our teens are involved with and it is something that's important. We need to know what they're doing online, what they're reading and what they're looking at. Sometimes you can think, oh, it's great, my teen's only online for half an hour. She could be reading the most toxic material. She'd be following the most toxic influencers. And that's worse maybe than an hour of Lassie, God forgive me, but you know what I mean, the modern equivalent of Lassie. So we need to know what online life looks like for your teen. They're under 18, whether you're the adult, you're the parent, you have a right to know how many apps are on her phone, not because you're being a difficult parent. Unfortunately, it's, you know, not because you don't trust her, because you don't trust anybody else out there. If she's a difficulty with that, show her a social dilemma and watch it together. What does she discuss? What does she share? What does she forward? Who's she following on Instagram? What's her TikTok like? All of these things. The less apps, the better. Again, I'd be absolutely dictatorial on this one. No negotiating. If you have a teen who's gentle about it, there's no problem. Fantastic. And that's great. And don't wait for them to get addicted. But teens get addicted. And I mean addicts. Addicts very quickly. Because it's created to be addictive. So the apps, the teens are the greatest commodity for our big tech giants. They are the greatest commodity. In fact, the greatest commodity right now are primary school children. So, so the less apps they have, the better. So TikTok, Snapchat, not really necessary, WhatsApp maybe. But anyway, you make those decisions. Limiting the time on the phone, no phone at night, absolutely not. No phone within an hour of bed, I'd say as well, because of the blue screen, the effect on sleep, etc. And you probably know that all the studies on false diagnosis of ADHD because teens are sleep deprived because of their phone usage. And because they're sleep deprived, they can't concentrate. Because they can't concentrate, they get jittery. Because of that, they get stressed. Their grades are affected. Their relationships are affected. And it's like a vicious cycle. So there's a whole studies done on that. And we have covered at length the impact of phone usage on our teens. So something to be really, really aware of there. Okay, the other thing I suppose there is, in all of this, I think it's important that we don't, our teens will thank us for helping them grow into responsible, independent adults. You're not going to be thanked for a while, though. So don't look for it, obviously. But establishing boundaries. Our boundaries, again, this is what we're talking about here, really. It's not being mean. You'll often hear that you're being so mean. Nobody else does this. You know, nobody else parents. And, you know, I'd really encourage you as parents to have a bunch of parents in school. But somebody else is cutting out there, so apologies. So I'll try and not. I don't know what the story is this evening, but anyway. But the point is, I suppose, there is about boundaries. You're not being mean. You're being objective. And you're trying to be fair in all of this. And if breaking rules means consequences, and consequences means behavior change. Again, here, just a small thing about the difference between fault and responsibility. What's the difference? Well, that's a really important topic for our teens, because fault is something that our teens can't do anything about. It's not our teens' fault that the bus was late and they were late for school. So if they have to deal with somebody in school who's a little bit annoyed the fact they missed the first 10 minutes of class, we need to help our teens not to take that on board, because it has nothing to do with them. They are responsible, though, how they react to that emotionally, and they are responsible what they do with the rest of the class period they're there for. That's what they can do. They're not responsible for the fact they find maths difficult. You know, that's not their fault. Maybe they haven't got the Einstein gene. But what they are responsible for is choosing what they're going to do about it. When do they do their maths homework? How do they listen in maths class? Do they put their hand up and ask questions? Do they ask for extension learning from the teacher, et cetera, et cetera? It's what they do with it. It's the growth mindset, which I'm sure you've heard from your teenage daughters about already. That whole thing. Letting our teens also know how much freedom they can handle. Because obviously giving more freedoms is a consequence of our teens being responsible. Now, as adults, just to caution, I suppose, ourselves in this, okay? Giving freedom is not giving freedom to be exposed, okay, to things that are just frankly toxic and unhealthy. And we will hear our teens saying, everybody else is doing this. Mom, I did my chore. I was kind to my sibling. I visited granny. I did all my homework and my report card's amazing. I really want to go to that sleepover. And we think we are virtually Cruella at this stage. We're so cruel. Okay, and that's a point for us to have the conversation with. Now, I'll just give you an example. I found this really helpful in a coaching session with a couple who I learned a lot from in terms of just parenting teens, okay? And that's why I think it's really great if you as parents, the greatest resource is parents, okay? So if you know a couple of great parents, you know, and there are great parents in school, absolutely, and I've talked to many of you, but it's that thing of, so I'll just give you an example. They gave an example of coaching, which I thought was brilliant. The daughter came home 16 and said, Mom, so-and-so's having a party. Oh, really? And Mom kept doing, she never did the direct to eyeball contact. She kept doing the whatever she was doing, emptying the dishwasher. Oh, really? That's lovely. It's a lovely idea. Always, always say everything is wonderful that you can. That's a wonderful idea. That's so nice of her to offer. That's really lovely. So who's going? Everybody. Well, that's great. It's going to be a great bash for everybody. Instead of doing the usual, really, who's going? Just, that's wonderful. And so so when's it on? This Friday. Okay, right, okay. Dad says I can go, which usually means Dad grunted and said, no offence to dad, okay, mums can do the same. What does your mother think? So it's a shuttle, backwards and forwards between mum and dad, okay? And then it's a case of mum says, oh, right, okay, that's great. Okay, look, and so what time do you have to be there? You don't know yet, okay. Okay, probably six. Oh, great, that's fine, no problem. So 6 o'clock you have to be there, right. And then what time is it over at? It's a sleepover. Okay. And do I know her mum and dad? You probably not. Oh, I don't, do I not? Okay. Oh, well, maybe I can ask them what time to pick up, or are they going to be there? Oh, I don't know. No idea. Oh, you don't know if they're going to be there. Okay, so I don't know the parent, and I don't know if they're going to be there. And everybody's going to be there. Okay. And are the boys going to be there as well as the girls? Yeah, everybody's going to be there. Oh, everybody's going to be there for a sleepover. And mum and dad aren't going to be there. So you just reiterate, obviously, the concerns without saying yay or nay, and just leave it and say, okay, leave it with me. I'll talk to your father. She knows already that's probably a non-runner. Okay. But what you're helping her to see is the points of discussion. And you're also helping her to see is that you're not Cruella, because you're not being a meanie. But there are certain things. And when she goes to dad will say, what does mum think? And she'll kind of muffle something. And she'll go off and come up with some other, you know. So it's just there is that there are certain situations that are just not helpful for our teens to be there, because don't forget frontal cortex. You can't blame them for not being in a situation when they're with a group of similar age teens whose frontal cortex is not developed, where everything can seem like a wonderful idea because there's no parents around. And that's not judging them in any way. It's just accepting the reality of, I'm sure all of us could write a book on the very irresponsible decisions that we made as teenagers. And thankfully, we had very responsible adults who prevented us from doing a lot more damage than we potentially did. So anyway, sorry for the long example there, but I just think it can be helpful. And it was from a parent, so I've never forgotten it because I thought it was very good. So seeing how to help her to, I suppose, also helping to brainstorm situations which she's mishandled. Go, okay, well, look, what? Maybe that wasn't the worst thing to have done. Or how could we do that differently? Or, you know, and I think another thing is there sometimes talking, you know, sometimes discussing situations that have worked out really, really badly. Sometimes for them, it can be very close to the bone. We still need to do it. If your teen is in a space of a vow of silence, I'm not talking to my parents about anything at this present moment in time, films are a great way of having conversations. And there's a lot of great films out there that your teenagers, I don't mean the typical kind of teen movies, which can be quite painful, but I mean ones where you might say, you know, Sophie Scholl or Wonder or 3 Yards to Chris Norton story, documentaries, which are great, which you get to see teens who object to challenging situations and you talk about it and you're not talking to them directly about them. Anyway, I think I've gone on quite a bit, but I just want to say, I suppose, here to finish with really is another very important thing to help our teens do is to manage their time. Self-managing time is a real big challenge for our teens and they get stressed about it. You need to sit down with them with their journal often. They do it with their coach, but as parents, it's really good to do it. When do they do their homework? When do they do their chores? When do they have their extracurricular? When do they have phone time? When do they have friends time? When do they have friends out of school time, etc. Really, really important to do that, because otherwise what happens is she forgets to do a lot of things. They all pile up and it all begins. And it's like a self-defeating prophecy, as it were. A self-fulfilling model prophecy. Consistently it happens. Don't do it for her, but help her to do it. Chores, very important. Chores are completely compatible with homework and with life. And if they're not doing chores, you're creating a situation of Miss Princess. And I'd say junior cert or leaving cert chores. Life, we're in Rosemont, the education, as you know well, isn't just about the leaving cert or the junior cert. That's the base. It's about education for life, being a flourishing young adult in the workplace, in your relationships, in the family that you go to form. And if they're not learning to actually be responsible in all areas of their life, and they're just being responsible in academics, we're not doing our jobs as educators. And volunteering, another very important aspect of our team's existence. Are they giving time to people? The lady, old lady down the road, whatever it is, very, very important things that we need to be helping our teens with. And life skills, things like helping them, how do they, you know, do their laundry, How do they cook meals? How do they, all these kinds of things. You know, it's easy to assume that they're becoming independent just because she's great in the basketball court or her grades are fantastic. But she needs to know how to self-manage all aspects of her life. And it's a great way to help her just to relish life. It's not just all about your maths grades. It gives her perspective that she can spend the afternoon on a Saturday baking or, you know, doing the gardening with dad or doing a bit of carpentry or I don't know, whatever else it is. And it doesn't always have to be outcome focused. The curiosity of learning with her big brother how to do a bit of metalwork. That's really important for our teenage girls, you know. Very, very important, you know, that schoolwork doesn't encroach on everything. Don't rescue your teen. When you rescue her, you're telling her you don't think she's able. Very important that you don't do that. And then ultimately, helping them to not to procrastinate over things, you know. Don't do the project for them, but to help them to step into that space. Don't make the excuses. And ultimately, praising them when they are responsible. Well done. You did a good job. And praising the behavior, not the outcome. Very hard for us not to do that. We tend to go, God, you had 90 in that test. Well done. As opposed to saying, God, you really managed your schoolwork this term. You know, really important. Or noticing what they do, you know, what they do with their siblings. Listen, you did a great job with your little sister there. She's really looking up to you. That's a lovely thing to be able to praise a team for. Anyway, I'm going to finish now because it's well beyond my time. And I'm really sorry for those of you who couldn't actually hear me. I hope you'll be able to hear the recording and I hope I'll be able to fix this for the next time. It's the first time I've had sound issues. But anyway, we'll see if we can try it better next time.